I mean,
we'll
yeah.
Have to start
well,
the recording.
Do you think Brian will be able to join us here? Do you want to give him one more minute, Kevin? Or?
Yeah, would you mind just giving a second?
Yeah.
Just hold me thinking for my BlackBerry. 1 second.
We did send him a panelist invite, right, John?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe got mixed up with the time.
I know. I confirmed with him a couple times today. Should be okay. Hey, so John, just the last time we talked, I mean, do you know how many people log in after this thing has been recorded? Because it goes out to 900 people, you said, or and do we have any visibility into who's downloading what? Or
To be honest, I'm not sure how many people. If we can find out how many downloads there are, we probably can. Mm-hmm. I'll ask the knowledge source people. I know the guy there who looks after the downloads, so I'll have a talk to him and see if he can tell me.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's, as I said this before, there's 890 people that all this goes out to.
Yeah. I will certainly be able to tell you how many people come through to the website after this.
Yep.
Okay.
Ron, can you tell how many people are on the call?
Yes, we can. Like, at the moment, there's only 16 people on the call, but that'll go up as time goes on, you know, because not many people log in right on time. There's always a couple of minutes late. But generally, we only get about 50 people on a call.
Okay.
So
I just got an email from Brian saying, I'm logged in and ready to go. Are you going to run through anything beforehand or just jump in? I'm going to reply to him. We're all waiting on you.
Brian just sent me a note saying that he's logged in, but he's muted, so I'm presuming he's used the wrong code. Did one of you guys just get an email?
Oh, you know what? He's in as a panelist. I'm not as a panelist. He's logged in as an attendee.
Oh, I sent him a panelist.
Okay. I need you to log in as a panelist.
Shall we get going?
Yeah.
I think we better, otherwise we'll get people dropping off.
Good. Okay.
Okay, I'll start the broadcast now and just say hello and then hand over to you, Ron.
Sure.
The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our Cashflow USA webinar. Today we've got Ron and a few other people on the call, and I'll just going to say hello and then hand straight over to you, Ron. So it's up to you.
Thanks, John. Yep. Today we have several people on the call. I'll go through that in a minute, but I guess we're very excited. You know, we've been having a number of requests for several years for when particularly Australians would come to the United States, they would always inquire, do you have rental insurance? And I'd be scratching my head a little bit perplexed. Like rental insurance? No. We are primitive in the United States. All we have is security deposits and good luck. Now, go away. I say that tongue in cheek. We're really proud to be able to say now the people who developed this product, they're on the call with us today. They're going to walk through the terms and the details and conditions of how the product works and how you can get coverage. But before doing that, I know that many of you who are attending or listening to the call today, you may or may not be aware that the Real Wealth Network, Jessica Rose, also known as Jessica Snore, recently left and took an opportunity that she couldn't refuse at Citibank. And while we're really, really sad to see her go, I did want to introduce Kathy Copeland, who has been servicing our client base for about 6 years now, and so some of you may or may not be familiar with her. I want to give the floor over to her really quickly just so she can say hi and introduce herself and give a couple other tidbits. So, Kathy, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Hi, I'm Kathy, and I've been working with Kathy Fedkin now for about 7 years. I am a real estate agent of 30-plus years. We won't say how long for real. And I'm also an investor. So my job for you is to have you contact me when it's time for you to look at a marketplace, because everything changes. So it's really important that you talk to us first before choosing a market to verify it's still good. Also, one thing to emphasize is that it's very important that you don't just show up and surprise the affiliates. They're all very, very busy, and you need to be aware of their time. So everything needs to be filtered through them and appointments made to see their properties. Kathy wanted me to let you know that the LLC should be set up before arriving in order to open a bank account, and that there are no properties no longer available at 20% return. So just want you to know that little party is gone. So anyway, that's it. If you have any questions, then you can just contact me through the email, and I'll be happy to answer any questions for you regarding marketplaces. Okay? Back to you,
Ron. Thanks, Kathy. Thank you. Now, one point of clarification. So when Kathy did say she is correct, there are no more. The only kind of 20% plus returns these days are when you're using leverage and financing. And it has been a difficult go for a lot of our Australians in trying to obtain leverage. Now, there are certain programs that are out there, like around 50% down. But if you're coming looking to buy something strictly entirely with cash, finding a 20% yield, you might see it on paper, but I would truly run away just because I don't think that would perform in actuality. You're just being marketed and try to sell something. Okay, so with that, let's kick into our topic of the day. And again, we've got two speakers today, Kevin and Brian. Kevin was the actual, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually rolled out to help develop this program. It was actually something that you rolled out in Australia initially, and it seems that many of our attendees would be very, are familiar with this type of product. And then I know you'll need to go, and then from there, Brian is going to pick it up and talk about really the nitty-gritty, the details of, you know, the program, the coverage, terms, conditions, and how people can get involved in that. So just quickly, on your screen, you'll see here's our standard disclaimer. We have this on every webinar. This is important, you know, just for today, less important, you know, but do consult with your advisors. How can you use, you know, particularly this product and in conjunction with limiting and mitigating your risk, consult with your professional advisors. So with that, Kevin, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Not a problem. You're more than welcome, and thank you. So I, as mentioned, I'm going to give a little bit of the background before I hand over to my colleague, Brian. Probably surprising in that there's no American accent on this end of the phone. So as alluded to before, I'm an Australian living in America that actually is ringing into this call from Toronto, so work that one out. I moved over to the US around about 6 years ago with Aon Affinity, so I'm sure many people are familiar with the Aon organization, world's largest insurance broker, and certainly if you're in Sydney, have a look at the southern end of the Harbour Bridge and you'll see our head office there. Ringing in, I guess, from a few different perspectives, when I was in Australia, I was Managing Director of Real Estate Insurance Brokers, which is actually a subsidiary of Aon. And I'm sure there's plenty of people on the call who use the Aon Rent Protect Plus product, which has been going for many years, but was revamped back in 2001. And at that time, I was Managing Director of that business. Fast forward to 2007. And I moved across to the United States and purchased my first investment property here. So I have a couple of interests in this product. I am a landlord like everyone else on this call, and I have property in Australia and most recently in the United States. And to be honest with you, regardless of any sort of personal bias towards the product, to me, the thought of not having some form of rent guarantee insurance on a investment property is just something I don't even contemplate. It wouldn't even be a consideration. So when acquiring a property in the United States, I was very surprised that this product didn't exist here. Cut a long story short, the product now exists. It's Aon. It's a company a lot of you are already familiar with. And the product over here is marketed as the Aon Rent Protect policy, which Brian will run into some detail on. Just to give a little bit more of an overview before I hand over to Brian, just a couple of things which I think are important just to put it into perspective for my countrymen on the phone. You will notice some fundamental differences between the Rent Protect policies available in the US and that is available in Australia. And principally, it relates to the fact that in Australia there are three components to the product: a material damage, damage to the property arising from the tenant, a public liability, and of course what we're all familiar with being rent default. In the United States, and I'm going to make a broad-based comment here and obviously requires you to look at your policy wordings. However, you will find American insurers are pretty comfortable with providing the material damage and the liability component of the policy that you would ordinarily have to buy extra for in Australia. So the part that is left fundamentally uninsured in this country until about 12 months ago when we established the business was the rent default component. Arguably, from my perspective as a landlord, the most impactful of all the losses I can have, quite candidly, if someone falls over or if their house burns down or gets damaged, I'm not too concerned about that. That's a conventional insurance claim which can be managed accordingly. The rent default immediately impacts my cash flow, and therefore I'm very focused on that as a landlord. Now, that situation changes for many, but for me, that's crucially important because of gearing and so on and so forth. I will also mention that, and the guys aren't paying me for this, my biggest issue at the moment is I just can't buy enough property in the US. It's a great place to invest. Having said that, the one sort of layer of complexity that appears, which doesn't appear in Australia, is whereas we've got a sort of be conversant with different state rules around tenant evictions and so forth. In the United States, you multiply everything by 50. So there are 50 variations, and even down to a more granular level, those variations can change based on counties. So to use a sort of Australian analogy, if you like, different rules in Newcastle, Sydney, and wherever, which does make it very complex. And if you talk to landlords here, and those in the know, you hear examples ranging from very quick eviction processes on tenants that decide to sort of maintain squatting rights, as it were, to in some states people talk about it taking a year to actually evict a tenant. Obviously an absolute worst case scenario. So I'm going to hand over to Brian, but I guess the core takeaway of this is the company that most of you would have been familiar with doing this in the US, in Australia, is now doing this in the United States. The product is in essence the same, all barring the material damage and liability, which as long as you're appropriately insured is not an issue in any event. And the risk around rent default and the, if you like, the complexities that go with it is really no different, if not worse, than it is in Australia. So while a great place to invest, and I'd be the first time to encourage anybody to invest in the US, the simple fact of the matter is, has the same degree of complexity, and this is a great way of mitigating the risk at what I think you will find is a very surprisingly low premium in comparison to what you're used to paying in Australia. So having said all of that, thanks for the time for letting us to present. Brian, are you on the line at the moment?
Yes, I am, Kevin.
Perfect. I'll hand over to you if that's okay.
All right. Well, as Kevin touched on there and just gave a brief overview of the origins of the product and our experience with offering it in the Australian market and now here in the United States, I'm just going to jump in here and go through some different dimensions on the policy itself, the coverages, the pricing, some of the eligibility surrounding what can and can't be insured. And the first slide you'll see in front of you, as Kevin alluded to briefly, is just a quick snapshot of the Aon organization. One of the reasons that this product hasn't been available in the United States market until now is due to the nature of the insurance industry in this country. A key component of that being that it is an extremely conservative market, and the launching of new products is a long and an arduous process. Something that the reason that we were able to do this is based upon our experience, particularly in Australia, which of the different overseas markets where the author of the product is the business that the U.S. version most closely resembles. What we did was look at that business model, look at the successes we've had there, the premiums, the coverages, and use that to build this and replicate product, take it to the different state insurance departments here in the United States, and now offer what is called in this industry a filed and admitted product. So Aon is a distributor. You can see here this is a couple bullet points of our carrier, QBE. Australian-based insurer, $13.6 billion in premium, $42 billion in total assets. Now, QBE is not the carrier partner we work with in Australia. However, they do have experience offering this product like going on in the Australian market. So if you want to click over now to your next slide, you can look at the public itself. So here you'll see, and again, what Kevin touched on a few minutes ago, the exposures landlords currently facing in the U.S. market and the typical standard insurance options available for mitigating those risks. So historically, landlords protect their exposure using a combination of insurance and security deposits. The insurance obviously protects the liability, the physical damage on the property. The security deposit, typically 1 month's extra rent collected up front, was really, in the case that a kind of default took place, really the landlord's best defense for trying to reduce some of those losses while getting the bad tenant out and getting it. So you have your homeowner's insurance policy. Limits are there for you to see. Really protects against the physical damage and then the liability or personal injury. Minor protection limits are the sum of the policy. And then again, that rent default exposure, that loss of rent due to tenants breaking a lease, abandoning the property if you have a military member who gets called up, really your best protection option was an amount of self-insurance, collecting rent from other properties that you might have, and then the security deposits that are collected. So as you can see, it really wasn't an ideal situation for protecting against such a potentially substantial risk. And that's one of the reasons that we introduced this product into the U.S. market. Can we jump over to the next slide, please? Okay, so does default insurance make sense in the U.S. rental market? So increasing default rates, do you know annually there are right around 2.5 million landlord-tenant actions filed in U.S. courts, predominantly for non-payment of rent. That's 2.5 million landlords out of the roughly 22 million. So it's just about 1 in 10 that's important to you with a tenant for reasons including rental non-payment. With the market growing, the increased number of people choosing to rent rather than to buy, that number is continuing to rise. Competition forced down entry costs, so because of this growing number of rental properties, the actual income per unit for, and particularly in larger urban markets, is lowering, so the increased default in combination with lower rental income to landlords is again driving this general economic fear and uncertainty around on whether or not, particularly for new investors, is this a venture that I want to submerge myself in? Is it worth the risk associated with owning these residential rental properties? And again, that key reason was, is my income going to be okay? Am I going to be able to cover mortgages, property taxes with this ever-present default risk? And again, that's really what this product is starting to invest in. So here, just looking at, we touched on this again, won't take too much time to jump in and go into things that we've already touched on, but when you own a rented out property and you're choosing to invest in residential real estate, obviously there's a number of risks associated, and again, we've touched on those. Some of them here, you can see damage to property by the tenant, liability from property ownership, again, going back to the risks that are covered by your general homeowners, landlords, your dwelling policy. Then you also have the default, the re-let costs if you do have to evict the tenant, legal expenses, obviously, that come along with that. Rent pursuit, if you decide to pursue the defaulted tenant after the fact. And again, protection is limited generally to the amount of self-insurance that you can procure with the rest of your portfolio, and then also the security deposit held. And in real terms, the money that you can potentially safeguard isn't going to be enough to cover those losses yet in the event that the default does occur that you're going to be facing. So now into the actual policy coverage deal details themselves. This is a look at what our product and rent protect actually guards against. So you can see on the far left side of your screen the event, instances of abandonment, middle of the night, the tenant just takes off without warning, next day, you don't have anyone living in the property, it's now vacant, which obviously brings up more problems than those rent protect. Eviction, tenant stops paying the rent, doesn't leave the property, go through the legal proceedings of repossessing the property, forcibly removing the tenant and having to re-rent the unit. Hardship to the tenant, you'll see, that's what we consider when a tenant files bankruptcy and the court releases them from any financial obligation, left of the tenant, military service, and then we'll also cover $1,000 in legal expenses to assist with that eviction process. Now, this policy is sold on a unit-by-unit basis, so one single-family home would come with its own unique rent protect policy. You have a duplex, there's potential for placing two policies, however, no requirement to cover the entire building or the entire portfolio. Same for a triplex, a four-unit apartment building. Each unit comes with its own unique rent protect policy. You can see there on the right the premium breakdown, the cost per year of the policy is based solely on what the tenant pays per month. So if you own a rental that costs the tenant up to $1,200 per month in rent costs, your 12-month policy is a one-time annual premium of $250. Now, you'll see there in italics below the pricing chart, there are a series, I shouldn't say series, there are two requirements for coverage. Because we wanted to keep the pricing and the coverage uniform across the various state and county markets in the United States, what we decided to do was base the claims payment on the tenant currently in the unit. The policy itself does cover the rental income of the property, so the policy isn't for the tenant. The policy claims payment are based on one or two criteria the tenant fit it. So if you look here, you'll see that we base eligibility on how long the tenant has been under contract. This is a person who's been with you living in this property for a year or longer. The only requirement for coverage is that in the last 12 months that this person has stayed up to date on their rental payments. If it's a new tenant or someone who's in their first year of contract with you, we ask to procure a policy that if you haven't already done so, that a tenant background screen be run containing three elements. Those being a credit check, a evictions history check, and a criminal records check. And based on the results of that check, this individual shows not having a felony record, an eviction in the last 5 years from a prior rental property, or a bankruptcy in the last 7 years. So the three requirements, again, no bankruptcies in the last 7 years, no evictions in the last 5 years, no felony record, or again, if there's someone who's been in the property for 12 months or longer, that they've stayed current on their record. Application process, because, again, we wanted to make this readily available to landlords not only across the country, but then also to investors of other countries as well. It's a online electronic self-serve application based upon the three elements that we collect. The application consists of, one, we take the address of the property that you are placing the policy on, the monthly rental amount that the tenant pays against returning that premium, and then your information with the policy holder. Quick review of the terms and coverage that's going to ask you to attest to the fact that you have run the check, background check if necessary, and the tenant met our criteria. Pay with a credit or debit card, and then our system will instantaneously send you a copy of your application as well as a certificate of insurance. The price process, again, bearing in mind that for many investors, owning these rental properties are a source of secondary income and not their primary day-to-day responsibility. So we wanted to make this whole process, including the claims, as streamlined and unintrusive as possible. So what we do in terms of paying out the claims is we let either you as the primary policyholder know that process, or if you have a property manager running your investment in the United States, they can do that as well. When the claim is filed is ultimately up to you as the policyholder. We can just run through a quick example here. We'll take October as an example. Your rent's due, your tenant's rent's due on October 1st. October 1st comes and goes. You don't receive, or your property manager doesn't receive that monthly rental check. You go through the standard due diligence in this situation, depending on the market. We'll say there's a three-day late notice that's not paid. Eventually, a five-day or six-day pay or quit that still isn't responded to by the tenant. So for simplicity's sake, we'll say we gave the tenant to the 15th to catch up. They didn't, so we went ahead and initiated the eviction. At this point, the claim would be filed. What happens is we collect this information from you, go back retroactively to the first skip payment date, so in this case, October 1st, and that starts on this policy the deductible period. So there's a 30-day wait from the time the tenant skips to the time the first claims check is paid. So in this instance, the first 15 days are already satisfied. So starting on November 1st, that week, when the debt will be coming in from the tenant, you'll be receiving your first claims check from us. That'll be for November's full rent reimbursement. November will now serve as month one of the potential six that you're eligible for collecting the claims checks. Those checks will continue until the six-month period caps or until a new tenant starts a lease. And then we'll also reimburse your first $1,000 in legal expenses, such as filing fees, court costs, attorney fees, if you need the property manager needs to have the locks changed, up to $1,000 will also be reimbursed under the policy. So, Ron, those are the details I really wanted to touch on. I guess now I will turn it over back to you, and we can open up for any questions.
Thanks, Brian. John, I don't have the Q&A box available to me, so if there are any that come in, can you just read them off for Brian? I'll kick one off, though, Brian. The application process looked pretty streamlined. How long does that take to kind of get through?
You know, that was really the idea, Ron. And again, it's the three pieces of information that we're collecting. It's a series of four screens. Go into the website, head into the application. The first screen takes the property address and the rental amount, and then your information with the policyholder. The next screen generates the terms and conditions, saying, yes, I attest to the fact that I've run this tenant check, or if it's a 12-month or longer tenant, that they've been current on the rent the last 12 months. From there, it generates your quote, shows you, okay, here's the rent you entered, here's what the policy is going to cost you. Agree to the quote, go to the next screen, enter your credit card information like you would with any online purchase, click submit, and you're sent your policy documents.
That's pretty fast.
I've just had one question, and that was for the contact details. And you're saying, Ron, that we should direct all of the questions through your website or to you?
You know, for the insurance, go ahead. I mean, Brian, go ahead and give out your contact information.
Yeah, you know, it's all done over our website, and the website is aonrentprotect.com/realwealth. And then through our website,
okay,
not only that'll have all the information that we, Kevin and I, spoke to today, but it'll also give you the ability to call into one of our three call centers. You can reach us via the email system on the website, or I can give you my direct contact information now as well. You can reach me. I'll just give you my email address. It's Brian, B-R-Y-A-N dot Kinsey, K-I-N-S-E-Y at aon.com.
I'll get your contact details off the email that I got from you and publish them on our Cashflow USA website so that people can pick them up a little bit more easily, just in case they didn't write that down. So we'll make sure that it's advertised. Now, I just have one other question. Sorry, Ron, go on.
No, please go ahead. Go ahead, John.
The question was just in relation to building and contents insurance. This is separate insurance, isn't it? So it's not all encompassing. This is
right,
a separate
right.
policy for
that is the, that's
rental.
The primary difference, right? Exactly. So the difference between how the program works here as opposed to how it works for Australian properties is this would be something you'd buy in addition to the content coverage that you have on the property. And this will solely protect the rental income of the resident.
Yep. I was actually surprised at just how affordable it was, if I can make that comment. For most of my properties, it would be $250 a year, and I thought that was very, very good value.
And, you know, because there's so many rental units in the United States, that was something that helped us keep the premiums down. It was roughly $21 a month. If you fall into that first premium bracket, and we didn't want to create a product that was going to disqualify too many landlords because of the steep premium cost or because of the stringent eligibility requirements. So we're very mindful of keeping it what we felt to be an affordable level.
Yeah.
When we launched the product.
Does the amount of the policy change from year to year depending on your claim history, or is it just going to be a set amount?
Yeah, you know, it stays level, and that's actually a good point. The filing claim isn't going to impact either your ability to place coverage in the future or the price of what you're going to pay for that coverage, because one of the eligibility requirements is that your current tenant is 5 years free of an eviction. If you do have to file a claim, that tenant now becomes ineligible for 5 years, but if the tenant you replace the defaulted original tenant with has a clean record and meets the three core eligibility requirements, no change to your ability, again, to place the coverage or the price you're going to pay.
That was the only other question that I had. I'm not sure that I expected a lot of questions because you covered it all very well. It seems like a very, very simple product. It's simple to use, and it certainly makes it easy for the claim process. So it just seems to be altogether something that the real estate investors here in Australia have needed. I certainly have thought that this was something that was missing.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. And, again, Ron, really thanks for giving us the time, and that sounds like those are the only questions we have.
Yeah, I think it's been good. I didn't know whether to expect a lot of questions or not, and the last comment I was going to make was really more of an inquiry to John and in terms of just sharing his comments, obviously because this is a product that they're already familiar with in Australia. And so John's already done that. I think now, for anybody who's interested, we have your contact information, Brian. They'll know where to go out to the website. John will publish it. And I do think that you'll have a lot more of people who would just want to have that peace of mind and will probably be engaging you to fill out this product for them.
Well, maybe it's just me, but I've got 8 properties in the US now, and I've had some tenant difficulties. I've got one that I'm going through at the moment. The tenant left, and I've lost something like 4 months' rent. So a cost of a policy like, you know, at $250 would certainly have saved me close to $3,000 just in one claim alone. I suppose that the more properties you have, the more likely you are to, you know, to have those kinds of issues.
Right, absolutely. Certainly a number of policies and the location of the property is definitely going to play into the likelihood of whether or not you're going to use the policy or not. But either way, we certainly feel like it offers a much needed peace of mind for investors.
Well, I know that from my own personal view and a lot of people that I speak to who are investing in the U.S., they're investing in the U.S. primarily for the cash flow and to support their income today in Australia. So if you have a rental property that's not performing, then it makes it difficult to pay your bills when you go to the supermarket if you're not getting the rental coming through from the U.S. So this adds a level of certainty to your income.
Right, right. And really making sure that we can protect landlords and investors' cash flow, that really is the key component behind the whole program. Whether, like you said, you're someone who's using your investment as your primary income, or if it's an investor looking to grow their portfolio as a retirement tool down the road, just make sure that in the event that the tenant does let you down, does stop paying its rent, there is an income interruption, that you can fall back on the insurance, continue to collect those rent payments as if the default didn't happen while you go through the tenant turnover. So you're still able to, like I said, pay for your groceries, cover the property taxes. If you have a mortgage, cover the mortgage. And it's it keeps business operating as normal as much as it can.
I've just had one other question pop up. Could you just reiterate how it applies to existing leases?
Yes. So it's you can purchase the policy at any point during the lease. The length that the tenant has been under contract is what's going to determine which set of eligibility criteria needs to be followed. So if Brian has been in the property for 13 months, if you want to place a policy on that property, then Brian has to have been current on his last 12 rental payments. If Brian's been in the property for 10 months, then if the tenant background check through a third-party service provider hasn't already been run, then a new one needs to be done, containing a credit check, an eviction history check, and a criminal record check, and that screen has to come back showing that Brian doesn't have a felony record, any evictions from a prior rental property in the last 5 years, or any bankruptcy filings in the last 7.
Hey, Brian, I have one question as a follow-up to that. So kind of in the world that we're in right now, a lot of our the people sourcing properties kind of turnkey providers, and they're the ones who have the kind of in-house property management. How engaged do the investors need to get with that property management to do all those checks? Or is it easy to do a third-party verification?
Yeah, you know, that really comes down to how involved you want to be in the investment or how comfortable you feel having the property manager do it for you. I mean, having a check run is as easy as going to an online service provider who offers these checks and having it run, or just making sure that the property manager you're working with tell them, hey, they all work with the biggest, best screening companies available. We work with a lot of turnkey providers across the country, and saying, I'm interested in this coverage. To make sure I'm eligible for this coverage, I need the screens you're running to contain these three elements. And you tell them that's what you need on the screen, they can certainly accommodate that. And most of them are already running it, and that's why we set the parameters where we did, because we found it was pretty much right in line with what most of the brokers in the country are already screening for.
Okay.
Just a couple of other quick points that I've got here. The policies are payable annually, I gather, and not monthly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the policies, we enroll through the US office, not through the Aon offices in Australia.
Right, correct. Same parent company, but run through different subsidiaries.
Yep. Okay, well, I don't have any other questions at this point. I think we've answered them all.
Brian, thank you so much for spending the evening with us. At least you're educating me. I mean, this is obviously something new and novel. Like, again, I think we're in the U.S. sometimes we're Neanderthals when it comes to some of the real estate products that we have. So, it's nice to come out of the cave and actually see the light, if you will.
Yes. It's my pleasure, Ron. Certainly appreciate the opportunity.
And from Australian's point of view too, Brian, thank you very much. It's certainly comforting to know that we can get the insurance there if we want it. Australians are very, very mindful of insurance, particularly when it comes to things like public liability and property insurance, and this is just another aspect that I'm sure many, many people would like to consider.
Well, thank you. And like I said, we're always here to answer questions and assist in any way that myself and my team can.
And Brian, why don't you just give the web address out one more time and then and your contact info.
Yeah, that's www.aonrentprotect.com/realwealth. And my email address is Brian. Brian dot Kinsey, Kinsey at Aon.com.
Great. Thanks so much, Brian. I appreciate you joining us today. So for the attendees, please don't log off just yet, because we still have one other presenter. Many of you know Larry Arth. Larry has a couple slides that he'd like to make some comments on. So, Brian, thanks again. You feel free to stay on, or if you need to. And, Larry, turning this over to you. I see your slides.
I won't go so far as to call this a presentation, more or less, for us visual people out there. Are you guys hearing me okay? I know we had problems earlier, and I'll make sure you hear me.
Yeah, if you could just speak up a little bit, Larry, you're a little quiet.
Okay, a little. Yeah, not a presentation, just kind of some information here. People are always asking, of sustainability, what are the needs and wants for housing? So I always like to refer to the U.S. and the world population clock. Of course, on the left side, they're talking about the U.S. If you kind of look where the arrow, it says, we have one birth every 8 seconds, a death every 12 seconds, and one migrant every 44 seconds, which gives us a net gain of one person in the U.S. every 14 seconds. If you do the math, that's 6,171 people every single day. That's about 2.25 million people per year. If you look way down at the bottom, it talks about July 4th of last year, the population was 313,900. And right now it's 316. It raised a little over 3 million people in the last, 15 months. So the population is really growing. Last time I read, there's roughly 2.5 people per household. So if you do the math, that's about 1 million new households needed each and every year here. So there's definitely a need for housing. In fact, I just read a report today that the single-family housing permit is the largest segment of housing or of building permits going on, and projected to 2014 to be an extremely strong year for new housing. So housing is definitely in strong demand here in the U.S. You can go ahead, John. Get the next slide coming. This one is a little complex, especially for the 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock hour we're pushing here where I'm at. But I know you have talked about, and Dipnet brought up on a number of occasions, the quantitative easing programs here. And you can see, based on the projections here from the political calculations company, that it has shot projections in a positive format. In 2012, we're sitting there at about $16 million GDP, and that has had a fairly steady growth. through the aid of quantitative easing. And, of course, I think you all know that quantitative easing is basically the Fed's buying basically $45 billion worth of Treasury securities each and every month, which brings that interest rates down to help, you know, through spending, you know, for high-ticket items like automobiles and housing and so forth. So basically what it shows that we would have been in a pretty strong recession if it wasn't for that quantitative easing. So the programs, per this political calculation site, has definitely helped to keep that economy going and moving us forward. John, do you have any questions about that? Does that make sense? Do you understand what this is illustrating?
Well, I understand it. Yeah, I'm actually still getting over the question about how you've got time to do this when you're breeding so fast.
It's it is a lot of information there, and hopefully you're all looking at it on a big screen because there is a lot of information. But by all means, you know, it'll be on your website there, so feel free to take a closer look at all this. It is quite impressive, all the mathematics that go into keeping the economy running solid.
From an Australian perspective, one of the issues about the quantitative easing is when it comes to an end, because that will probably have some effect on the US-Australian dollar exchange rate.
Yes, and that's something we're trying to ascertain. I don't know if anybody knows the answer to what that's going to look like. I know right now they're trying to keep the economy kicking forward, but that's obviously something we're all concerned about and keep an eye on. But I'm done with that, unless you have some questions. I'm done with that. You can move on. And this is a tough one to read, again, unless you have a big screen. But really what this here is illustrated, this just came out here a couple days ago, and I thought it was kind of pertinent to share with you folks. It basically shows the affordability for the top, the largest 25 markets within the U.S. Again, there's lots of markets, but these are the largest populated metropolitan areas. And basically what it looks like, they're comparing last year, 2012 to 2013. And in the green, you'll basically be seeing affordability. Now, it's important to understand, I think you do through the previous courses I've given to teachers, there's a lot more due diligence to understanding where a great place to invest is than just the one diligence of affordability. But the affordability is a very important aspect. And you can see throughout the last year, more markets have been turning red, meaning the affordability within those markets are starting to deplete. So the green markets represent those that are considered affordable markets, basically where the median income within that market can sustain and pay for a median home price. And there are still a number of markets. Again, there's a lot of metropolitan areas that are not listed here. These are just the largest 25 cities. But it kind of goes to illustrate that the markets are affordable. They are depleting, which means those who have invested over the last year or two are definitely getting some capital growth, which is very exciting. But those looking for cash flow, it's very important to look for the sustainability of that cash flow. And, of course, for that, we're looking for those green markets. You can see, for example, again, a small print, the number one there with a B-plus rating is Atlanta. It's the most affordable market right now in the U.S. You can see there's just a whole lot of – Dallas is a very strong market. Detroit, though, again, there's a lot of diligences to understand a good market. I'm not a fan of Detroit, but it is a considered an affordable market. Again, population growth is a huge one to look at. And in this particular case, Detroit has a declining population, so I don't particularly put that as a favorable investment. But this particular slide is talking about affordability, and it is an affordable market. Minneapolis is ranking very high. Pittsburgh, Portland, most of the markets that you've been hearing us talk about over the last year are rating there on the greens. I thought that was an interesting slide for you. So that's all I really have to share. I just wanted to kind of point those little infographics out for what that's worth for you folks, and that's all I have.
Well, I think everybody likes to get an update of what's happening in the U.S. We get our rather sanitized press about what's happening. You know, from what you can believe in the press, America is just going from bad to worse, but you give us a picture that that may not necessarily be the case in all aspects of its economy.
Very true. You definitely have to read between the lines. There is definitely challenges for the U.S. I'd never sugarcoat that, but you got to read who's putting the article out and who might benefit from the information put out in that article. And one of the things I do literally on a daily basis is sift through articles and try to make sense out of it and try to get some supporting documentation to find out what is true and what's just a lot of political spins, if you will. But, yeah, there are some great things happening, and understanding the diligences and looking for the positives, there's a lot of positive things to find out there. And I think this is one slide that kind of illustrates that. If you're looking for the greens, if you will, those affordable markets, they still exist.
Well, I don't have anything to add at this point. Ron, do you?
I think Ron stepped out.
Yep, maybe he has, yep. Well, at this point, then, we'll just wind it up, Larry, if you've got nothing else to add, and I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
So, Ron, if you're there, Brian, Kevin, and Kathy, and you, Larry, thank you very much for your time today, and thanks,
our
everyone,
pleasure.
For
thank
listening
you.
In. And we'll catch up with everybody soon, I hope. Don't everyone remember that the Cashflow USA seminar is coming up at the end of November in Sydney. I hope to see a lot of you there, and contributions on the Cashflow USA website forum are always welcome. So please, everyone, keep looking in there, and contributions about your problems and all of the good things that you experience with the US are always welcome. Thanks again, everyone.
Thanks, Don. Thanks, everyone.
Great. Thank you. Bye.